Hey, Changemaker, welcome back to the podcast. This is Julia Wicklander, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. And I need to be honest, this has been quite embarrassing. This guest has endured some of my horrible tech problems. I actually interviewed her last year, like a full year ago. And then last summer, I got myself a new computer. And in the midst of that mess, the whole episode disappeared. So incredibly unprofessional. But it is the reality of creating digital media like this. You can't have too many backups. So I've learned my lesson. I've apologized. And last year, I actually had the chance to meet this guest in person, which was great. And we also had the chance to find a time early this year to record this conversation again. My guest today is Ana Laura Araya, and we've actually had the opportunity to share an episode with Ana Laura Araya when she was interviewed on the Power of Stories podcast, which is also available on girlsglobe.org, an incredible podcast by the team at sayitforward.org, with conversations with inspiring women from around the world. So if you haven't listened to that podcast, I recommend it highly. So without any further ado, because there's been a lot, let me introduce you to our guest today. Ana Laura Araya is the executive director and co-founder of Soy Niña, a girl-serving organization that works in urban communities in San Jose, Costa Rica. The organization is currently 6 years old, and Ana Laura has studied journalism, photography, and graduated from Georgia State University in Atlanta. She has worked at nonprofit organizations and private foundations for over 14 years and has experience in the areas of communications, event planning, and fundraising. She has also recently just finished a certificate degree in nonprofit management from the Harvard Extension School. And she is a very passionate person. She is on a mission to raise awareness about the challenges that girls below the age of 18 face worldwide. We talk about the important work that she does with Soy Niña, about the challenges of starting and managing an organization. She shares some incredibly inspirational stories, and we talk about a lot of other things. I really hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, especially as it was the second time coming. Enjoy. Ana Laura, thank you so much for joining me on the Hey Changemaker podcast. It is so nice seeing you.
Hi, Julia. It's so nice to see you as well. Thank you so much for having me. You know, I'm a big fan of you and Girls Globe and the podcast, of course.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I mean, it is such an inspiration to speak with you. And I would just really love for you to start by sharing a story of when you just knew that you had to be a change maker.
Well, being a change maker is an incredible task, but sometimes I don't even believe it myself, you know. I think it's a lot of teamwork, and I think we can't do anything by ourselves. But sometimes, like, Soy Niña is about to be 6 years old, and when somebody says, oh, you're a change maker, I'm like, really? I am? I think I've always, you know, it's always been in my heart to help others. And I think, like, for example, my journey in the nonprofit world started in 2010, right after the Haiti earthquake. So there was a big earthquake where over 200,000 people lost their lives. And I live in Costa Rica, which is not that far from Haiti. And I had something put in my heart, you know, you have to go there. I'm also a photographer. And I thought, I want to go there and document the aftermath of the earthquake. And then I also thought, well, if I take pictures, will that help enough? Will that be enough? And I firmly believe in the power of stories through photography. So And I learned a lot about the news through photography. But at that time, I wanted to do more. So I went with an organization called SOS Children's Villages, which is an international organization that they have all around the world. And they help children that for some reason can't be with their biological parents. And I thought I was just going to go and help out with the kids because I love children. And when I got there, they gave me this job like, oh, so you studied photography and you studied journalism. So they gave me this job to be like donor management or donations management. And we used to get like big donations, like millions of diapers and thousands of mattresses. And they gave me this really important job. And that's when I realized that in the nonprofit world, you can use what you studied. Like, you know, you don't have to study psychology or social work to work in the nonprofit world. And I said, wow, what I studied actually helps out in the nonprofit world. And ever since 2010, where I was in Haiti for 2 months volunteering with this organization, I never left the nonprofit world. And I always worked in nonprofits, but it wasn't until, you know, the beginning of Soy Niña where I said, maybe I have to start a nonprofit, because I saw that there was a need for something in Costa Rica and there was nothing else at the time. There was nothing like Soy Niña. And it's just a gut feeling and intuition. And you know, that's when I started the organization. But I don't know. It's a hard question that you're asking, because the journey to become a change maker, I think it's very gradual and it's little pieces and parts. But I can tell you that ever since I volunteer after the Haiti earthquake, I've never left the nonprofit world. And I think everybody who works in the nonprofit world, just like many other careers, like we're all change makers. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, it is, it's exactly what you say. It's gradual, and sometimes it's difficult to pinpoint that aha moment that you just had. But so, Soy Niña, you're the co-founder and director of Soy Niña, and I would love for you to share about the mission and vision of the organization.
Sure. Yes, we are turning 6 years old, and I can't believe it. In Spanish, Soy Niña means I am a girl. And what we do is we work to empower young girls who live in vulnerable communities. So, so far we have worked in 3 communities that are urban here, close to the capital of Costa Rica in San Jose, but, we're looking to expand soon. We've always thought about, you know, reaching other communities here in Costa Rica. A lot of people think that Costa Rica is, and it is, a tourist spot, and it is paradise, and it is beautiful, but we don't see the other part of Costa Rica. Tourists don't see the other part, which is poverty, inequality, drugs, crime. You know, we're part of Central America, and it's a very complicated region. And actually, our violence is going up right now. So yeah, we know we have the mission to reach more girls, especially in rural areas. But what we do is we work to give tools to girls so that they can, you know, take charge of their lives, because a lot of times during this adolescent years or your childhood, something takes over, you know, you're not empowered enough and something takes over. All of a sudden you're 13, you're dating an 18-year-old boy who is possibly, you know, involved in risky behavior, drug crime. And then all of a sudden you're pregnant and we know, you know, what can happen. It's very hard to leave the cycle of poverty once you have an early pregnancy, especially in these communities where we work. So we want to give girls the tools to say, you know, I can change my life. I can decide what to do. And we want to show them that there's a world out there. They spend a lot of time in their communities. A lot of times they don't leave, you know, they don't have the resources to get out to the city, ride in a car, ride in a bus, outside of the city. So, you know, we want to show them that there are girls who, you know, went to the university, studied, finished high school and reached their dreams, and that they can take charge over their lives. And we do this through a girls club, a weekly girls club. This is inspired on a nonprofit in the United States. And the girls club runs from February to December. And it's weekly, And the girls come, they enroll. I mean, most of the girls that we have in the program have been enrolled for many, many years because it's a continuous program. And depending on their age and their grade and their community, that's the club that they join. It's like an after school. And during this space, you know, we teach them and we guide them through a process of empowerment, and we teach them life skills and human rights and early sexual education. And it's a safe space where they can be themselves and talk about what's going on in their lives, because a lot of them, unfortunately, have very, very difficult challenges. And I truly admire these girls, because when I think about some of the things that they're going through in their lives, I think, wow, I mean, they really are warriors. They're overcoming, you know, deaths and crime and negligence, abandonment. I mean, it's their everyday life. So we want to have the girls have tools so that they can say, you know, I can overcome this, and I'm empowered, and I'm a strong woman. I'm a strong girl. I'm going to be a strong woman, and I can, you know, overcome these obstacles.
Amazing. And it's been 6 years now with Soy Niña. What would you say has been the impact that you've seen since you started Soy Niña? What sort of are the biggest milestones or the biggest impact that you see that the organization has had in that time?
Well, there have been so many milestones, and I can't believe it's been 6 years. It's happened really fast, and as a social entrepreneur and as a fundraiser, it's been very difficult, more difficult than I would have ever imagined. But as you say, like, seeing the impact, is it makes it all worth it. We started in February 2018, and in May 2018, so like 3 or 4 months after we started, we had a parents meeting for one of the girls clubs. And in that parents meeting, there were a couple of moms and aunts or grandmothers, because there's, you know, most of the girls live in a house where there's a woman head of household. So there were mothers and grandmothers crying of gratitude and saying, you know, I had my granddaughter. She didn't eat in public. She had a lot of anxiety. She didn't eat the whole 6 hours at school, because I would send her a lunch, and then she would be embarrassed, or she would, you know, have, you know, want to vomit her lunch. And now, ever since she started Soy Niña, she's been more confident. And she's now, I went to pick her up at school, and she was sharing her lunch with her classmates and, you know, eating lunch with more girls. And that's just like invaluable. So in that moment, in May 2018, just a couple months after we started, me and the psychologist that worked there and the other founder, Adriana, we were like, wow, this is working, you know? They were so grateful. The parents that were there, they were so grateful. And I think during the rest of the time, so fast forward to almost 6 years ahead, I think we have seen so many beautiful testimonies of girls that come and tell us, like, you know, if it weren't for Soy Niña, I wouldn't have overcome this. I wouldn't, you know, there's been, of course, disclosures of sexual abuse. And there was even a disclosure of sexual abuse in the girls club with a first grader in front of the girls. And we told her, are you sure you want to share right now with all the girls? And she said, I want to share with all the girls what happened to me last week. So we help them go through that. We want to end that. We want to decrease the trauma that creates that. So there's a lot of girls that have said, you know, if it wasn't for that, for Soy Niña, for the girls club, for the clinical psychologist, I don't know where I would be. I don't know if I would have said anything. I don't know if I, you know, there was another girl whose father, she's 12 now, but I think she was 9 at the time, whose father was in prison, and then he left prison and he got out, and he would tell her, I'm going to see you this weekend. I'm going to see you this weekend. And this went on for 6 months, and he never showed up. And she said, thanks to Soy Niña, I told my father at 9 years old, please don't call me anymore. You're breaking my heart. I mean, if you're going to tell me every week you're coming and you're not going to come, don't come. And she ended the relationship with her father. And her grandmother said, thank you. Thank you, because she did it on her own. So imagine imagine that, right? Like, so we've seen so many beautiful testimonies of girls just becoming empowered to learn and learning how to handle and taking ownership of how to handle these difficult situations that life throws at them. So it's been beautiful. It's been beautiful. And there's girls, you know, that come to Soy Niña and I'm like, wow, they're flying. They're going to be an astronaut. They're, you know, they're empowered. Mm. They have, you know, a lot of the girls, not a lot, actually, very few, but some of the girls have a loving mother and father. And you can tell, you know, they have like a loving relationships at their homes, and you can tell that they're going to be amazing. And there's other girls that have been with us for 5 years, 6 years, that still come with a sad face.
Mm.
And it's a work in progress. And I don't know where they would be without us. But you know, every girl is different, and that's what's so beautiful. And every girl has their different personality. And I think that has been the most beautiful thing in Soy Niña, just seeing the girls and seeing them overcome. I think all of us that work at Soy Niña wish there would have been a Soy Niña when we were girls.
Mm.
Because a lot of us with things to resolve from our early childhood or adolescence.
Mm. Amazing, Ana Laura. Thank you so much for sharing that. And congratulations on these 6 years and all of the impact that you've had and all the girls that have had the privilege, the opportunities that Soy Niña has given them to change their lives and the trajectory of their lives. So that is really amazing. Congratulations. Ana Laura, I would love for you, I mean, we've been talking about these girls and it just brought a question to mind of our own sort of, you said that you would have wanted something like Soy Niña when you were growing up and how everyone who encounters the organization feels the same. How do you feel that you have had the opportunity to actually build the confidence to get to where you are and actually, you know, have the confidence to start an organization? What do you think is sort of the guiding, you know, where do you think that comes from for you?
You know, I think I am 38 years old and I'm still a work in progress. I'm still healing. Yes, aren't we all? I'm still healing. I think I had very, very low self-esteem when I was and it's statistically proven, like, you know, you feel pretty good about yourself and around 9, 10 years old, 11, your self-esteem starts to go down, like statistically as a girl, especially as a girl. Boys also have their own struggles. So I think at that age, like 11, 12, 13, I had very low self-esteem. But focusing on the positive, I never saw myself, I never knew there were, I always thought that I could do anything I wanted because I grew up in a house where my mom became a very successful journalist. And I think she never said, you know, you can't be this or you can't be that. I didn't know, you know, how hard it was to be a woman engineer or to be a woman soccer player or to be a woman firefighter. But I thought if I wanted to be a soccer player, a firefighter, or an engineer, I could do it. And I think this was instilled in me from my family. And you know, we have that privilege that, you know, I was surrounded by people who went to college and got a degree and followed their dreams. So I think it was beautiful that, you know, my parents said to me, whatever you want to do with your life, you can do it. And I always tell people, and this is such good advice, I mean, everybody knows that you shouldn't do a career focus on the money, you should do it on your heart, you know. Because I mean, my mom's sisters, they wanted to be educators and they wanted to be like kindergarten teachers. And I think my grandfather said no. Don't do it because you won't make money. You won't, you know, what are you going to do? And I think my parents broke that and said, whatever you want to do, do it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's beautiful. You know, if you want to be, I mean, we have tons of girls that want to do hair and nails, and I think it's beautiful, you mm-hmm. know, whatever you feel that you want to do with your life, we need to follow that dream. So, but I'm still working on the self-esteem. I'm still working on the confidence. I think one thing that I pride myself in is that, you know, I was never alone. This was never, Soy Niña wasn't like my dream only. Like, so many people joined me at the beginning. So many people are here now. And I do agree with you that it takes confidence to even like get to those people and put together all those people. But yeah, I'm still a work in progress.
Yeah. No, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. It really does give some perspective as well to just realize, you know, what all that you have with you that you've been given throughout your life, but also everything that you've overcome and everything that you yourself have, you know, you've built and you've changed. And that is, it's great to just hear that and to acknowledge that as well. So looking at your entrepreneurship journey, what do you wish that you knew when you started Soy Niña 6 years ago?
You know, I have to say something that a lot of entrepreneurs say, and it's ignorance is bliss. I have to I mean, I would be here if I knew everything, but I definitely had no idea how hard it was. I remember calling a lawyer who works in starting nonprofits, because starting a nonprofit, you know, it's different in every country. And I'm talking about the legal work. Mm. And I was talking to a guy from Honduras here in Central America, and he was telling me how extremely difficult it is to start a nonprofit in Honduras. It could take years. Mm. And it broke my heart. But anyways, here in Costa Rica, it's also a difficult paperwork. And I called a lawyer, and she said to me something super rude. She said, everybody wants to start a nonprofit and it's not easy. And then, you know, and I'm tired of helping people, and it's difficult, and it's more difficult than what people imagine. Mm. And at this point, when I had this call with her, I had already thought about starting Soy Niña for over 2 years. Yeah. I had already researched what else was out there, which I think is a very important step that you need to do. You need to say what exists already. And I was mad. I was mad. And I said, you know what? I'm going to look for another lawyer. And I did to do the paperwork. But I would say I had no idea all the struggles. We got into a roller coaster of you know, of not having funds and then needing funds for the end of the month. And I think every story is valid. I have friends that started nonprofits because they got a grant from the U.S. Embassy. And it was different. It was a different journey. And I think all journeys are so different. But in our case, we received a donation from a guy from the United States. And then we ran out of money. So we had an event and then we ran out of money. And then, you know, we created a very special partnership that we still have on right now with UNFPA Costa Rica, which is one of my favorite United Nations agencies. And they even hired us to do some logistics for some workshops in indigenous communities, just so that we would have money in our bank account. Mm-hmm. And that was beautiful. I mean, that was such a, you know, they couldn't donate. So they were like, okay, you know, you have the expertise. We're going to hire you. You're going to do the logistics. So I would say fundraising is a huge struggle. I have also known of people that start a nonprofit out of their own pockets. You know, I said to how do you fund your nonprofit? And she showed me her purse and she's like, this is how I fund my nonprofit right now, you know? So I mean, every story is different, but fundraising is a struggle, and it's a larger struggle than what you imagine, I think. But I think that once you start growing, the funds come easier. So the more funds you raise, the more funds come, and the more people trust in you, the more credibility, the more years you have. You know, there's a lot of grants that you can only apply after you turn 3 years old, 5 years old. So
yeah,
that's that. There's also a lot of limitations. Like once you reach a $50,000 budget, you can't apply to some other grants. So I would say ignorance is bliss. Fundraising is a struggle, and also growth, strategic growth. Right now, we want to expand, and it's a scary moment because it's like, okay, who's going to give out the program in a rural area? How are we going to train that person? Mm-hmm. What should her salary be, or their salary be? I mean, how do we not lose touch of our essence if we're going to grow? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of, you know, business-like decisions that we have a board of directors that helps us with that. But yeah, I would focus on the ignorance is bliss, because a lot of times when you start something, you don't really know what's coming, but you're so passionate about it that you're still going to do it. And I think this is the case for all entrepreneurs, for no matter what business they're into. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I agree with you. I think that if we had known everything beforehand, maybe it would have changed our decision. I don't think so, though. I think that, you know, the challenges also are a part of what motivates us. It's also something like, okay, well, if it was too easy, then, you know, anyone could do it. But yeah, sometimes it requires the right person in the right time, the right group of people, the right partners. And it can take time to build that. For sure.
I agree.
So what advice would you have for others who, I mean, given that, everything that you wanted to know, but what advice would you have for someone who's thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, creating change in their own community or in a community close by?
You know, I think everybody needs to follow their heart. I would never tell somebody if they want to do something, don't do it. I would never say that to anybody. There are so many nonprofits. There are so many causes. There's so many, you know, different things we can do. It's infinite. However, there's so much need in the world. Yeah. So much need. So like, it doesn't matter if you're going to reach this community, there's another community. And I would say, do it. I would say, why not? Like I said, starting a nonprofit, which I don't know if it's the journey of these people, it's very hard, but it's all reachable. If you put yourself, your heart into it, and it's what you really want to do, I would say, do it. I've heard so many great ideas on how to overcome, you know, all these, inequality problems and, you know, environmental problems, and there's so many great ideas that I mean if we can do it, I think we should. So I would say follow your heart and do it, and do it. If you feel it in your heart, you need to do it. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And Anna, Laura, we're entering a new year, and there are lots of things happening in the world that can feel really difficult. How do you stay hopeful? How do you stay optimistic and positive, which I think you have to be as a social entrepreneur? How do you continue to believe that change is possible?
Yes, Julia, you're right. I mean, around the world, there's so much going on. Like, even Costa Rica is a very peaceful, democratic country, but for example, you know, we have a lot of migration. We have transit migration from Venezuela, from Haiti. I mean, all around the world, there's struggles. I would say focus on the positive. We always have to focus on the positive. So there's, you know, you can't lose hope. You can't lose hope. And for example, if I get too overwhelmed, you know, on social media, looking at horrible news, then I just turn off the phone for a little bit. Not that I should. I don't know if I should or not. But you know, you also have to work on yourself and your mental health. But I would say there's always hope. I think we all know this, that there's a lot of horrible things happening around the world, like infinite, right? But there's also wonderful things, and there's also wonderful people that are doing good in the world. And I would say focus on the positive. And if you're getting overwhelmed mentally, because it happens, especially with so much war going on, and you know, we're on the other side, so we don't even get half of what you guys get here in this side of the world. But I would say also do some inner work and focus on yourself, because that's, they say that's the most important part, you know, right? Yeah. Right. We have to focus on ourselves. Yeah. And if you can, you know, do something for somebody close by, you know, it doesn't have to be across the world. Like, for example, we here have the migration going on. And if we can do something, then we should do it. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I really think that there is so much hope to be found in actually taking action. Because I think that if where you feel paralyzed, that's sort of where the hopelessness can creep in, right? Yes. And of course, honoring
life for a little bit, that's okay too.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. And like honoring your own mental health and your own self-care is important too, for us to be able to build resilience, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, Anna Laura, thank you so much for joining me today. Do you have something else that you would like to leave our listeners with?
Julia, I just want to say thank you for having me in this space, and you do such amazing work. I get your newsletter all the time. I see the blog post and everything, and you are sharing so much important work on girls' empowerment around the world. And I just want to thank you for having me be in this podcast and a part of Girls Globe, and for, you know, sharing all these important stories that people need to know that happen around the world with girls. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And I look forward to hearing and sharing more of the stories from the Soy Niña community as well.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation with Anna Laura Araya. As you know, this podcast is available wherever you're listening to it right now. And if you're not following the podcast, please do that in your favorite podcast platform. So if you're listening to it on Apple Podcasts, click the little check button to subscribe and follow the podcast. That way you won't miss an episode. You can do the same thing on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening to it. And of course, if you want to get new emails, new episodes in your email inbox, you can subscribe at girlsglobe.org/changemaker and get all of those emails and also other news from Girls Globe, including amazing other podcasts that we feature. So go there. And at girlsglobe.org/changemaker, you can also nominate a guest for the podcast, and you can leave a voice message. Do you have any, you know, I'm always open to new ideas. Do you have, you know, insights or things that you think I should discuss with new guests, or questions for a particular guest that I could perhaps have on again? Or if you just have something that you want to say and share with the community, please leave a voice message. I'm really curious. That's it. I hope that you take care of yourself, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Bye, Changemaker.